and we're off and running. Hour number two of the early show on this Wednesday, August the 28th, 2019, 18 minutes past the hour. And we have got a great guest this hour, but I do want to begin by thanking our guest last hour. It's one of my favorite things to do every year, and it's become a tradition here around the station, to talk to the editor, assistant editor of the Old Farmer's Almanac 2020 edition, now on sale, newsstands everywhere, Tim Clark. That's always informative and interesting and talks about the weather, something we all love to talk about. So if you missed it, remember, it's going to be snowier here in Ohio and warmer this winter. Warmer, but more snow. And if you want to hear that interview, you can always go to the website. I'm sure it'll be there within 24 hours. Adam does a great job of that. WWGH1071.com. Click on the Scott Spears tab and look for Tim Clark, Old Farmer's Almanac interview, or catch it in the repeats here on the station. Now this hour, speaking of Adam, we have a guest on the program who every Monday morning, more or less, from 10:15 to 11 a.m. is a guest on Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam Lepp. He has been on this show several times. I believe his first appearance on this station was on this show several years ago now, hard to believe. He is an author. He is an expert in the world of politics. He is a blogger. He is a professor, and always a pleasure to welcome to these microphones Dr. Ronald Fineman. Dr. Fineman, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Scott. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. It's always good to speak with you.
Yeah, this is the 19th time I've been on with you, but it's been 5 months since the last time, so I'm very eager to be back on.
Oh, it's good to have you back on. And you know something? Because I do listen to your show with Adam on Monday morning, and since this has come up several times, and it's been 5 months since you've been on, I'm going to address this on the air. I think I've had this conversation with Adam off the air, but I'm going to do this once and for all. Because he seems to be fascinated with the fact that I call you Dr. Fineman. And he calls you Ron. Now, I'm going to tell you why I do this, because this is the once and for all reason, explanation for why I do this. Many years ago, I used to interview Dr. Henry Heimlich, who was from Ohio, practiced in Cincinnati, Ohio, creator of the Heimlich maneuver. And when I was interviewing him on the air, I referred to him as Dr. Heimlich because that was a big thing, the Heimlich maneuver. The maneuver was named after him. Mm-hmm. And I think if I had referred to him as Henry, people would have said, well, who is Henry and why do I care if Henry knows about the Heimlich maneuver? And I think when people tune in, whether you have a scientist or a doctor in education or a doctor in medicine, if somebody's just tuning in and you're calling them by their first name, if I would have said Henry, they'd have said, well, why does Henry know more than I do? Why does Susan know more than I do? But if I tell you it's a doctor, then you know. So that's the reasoning for it. There you go.
Well, the only thing I'll do in defense of Adam is he does say Ron a lot, but he also says Dr. Ron or Ronald Fineman at the same time. So if people are listening for the first word, they hear the name, but he might say Ron much more than otherwise, yes.
Yeah, so, but that is the reasoning for why it's done.
I have no problem either way, whether you call me Ron or call me Dr. Fineman. I'm very happy both ways.
You know, but before we move on past the show you do with Adam, there is something interesting when I'm listening to that show that I find fascinating. Because a lot of times, you guys go to two things that we rarely ever talk about in our interviews, and that are the looks of candidates and the ages of candidates. And I find that interesting. Do you think those two things really matter?
I think ages do matter, and I am concerned that we have a number of people who are the front runners now who are actually, if they came into office, would be older than Donald Trump when he came into office. And I do think that's an issue. I really do think. It's not because I don't like Joe Biden, for instance, but I'm concerned about imagining him in office for the next 5.5 years, you know, counting the year and a half to the election, and maybe 9.5 years. Will he be in his 80s, be able to do the job of president? And I still teach, and I'm just 2 years younger than Joe Biden, but I say to people, I'm teaching part-time, I lecture part-time, I don't have stress, but to have the job of being president in your late 70s, early 80s, worries me about the level of ability to deal with the crises That's why I worry. As far as looks, no. Adam is very big on looks. I am not. But, I mean, he always likes to joke about looks, and that's fine for him. But I think age is an issue.
Well, it's interesting because I look at the presidents we've had, and I think everybody would agree that that is the highest political office in this land.
Most stressful job in the world, too.
Absolutely. And I think if you go back and look at the people who have run, if you are a connoisseur of how people look, a lot of times the people who have lost and lost big time were probably the better looking people.
That could be true, because I think that is not important. I agree.
You know, I mean, like,
it's just that everything about presidents we like to have discussed, and whether I do or Adam or anyone else, every angle you can think of, you know, people have discussed the presidency, and so therefore looks is part of it. I always point out that Franklin Pierce is often called one of the handsomest presidents, and he's a true disaster in the White House. And Abraham Lincoln is certainly not a good-looking man, but he's the best president, so looks should not matter. I agree.
Well,
but age, I think, is, and if you go back to my article on the Progressive Professor of August 19th, I point out the average age of presidents is 55, and most have been in their 50s. 24 presidents have been in their 50s when they took the oath, and only five, you know, and the fact is that 11 presidents were 60 up to 70 and a half years of age, ranging from Harry Truman at age 60 to Ronald Reagan, age 69, and Donald Trump at 70. And we have, of course, nine who are in their 40s. And I think if we look back and we realize that real change comes usually when you have a younger person, such as a John F. Kennedy at age 43, a Jimmy Carter at age 52, a Bill Clinton at 46, a Barack Obama at 47. And we have a number of candidates now that I think can emerge from the pack and become the best choices, rather than having people who are going to reach their 80s in office. Not because I'm against them, but I just worry about the age and health issue.
I want to come back to age in a second, but this looks thing is interesting to me because I think it's fascinating that when you go back, Dewey versus Truman, which a lot of people thought Dewey was going to win that election, Dewey was popular with the women, a lot of people said. And he obviously did not win that election. And we also, one of the most interesting things to me is, if we look at the last election, if you are a male and you like females, there was only one female running in that race. So obviously you would probably say that Hillary Clinton was the better looking candidate than Donald Trump. Not that women may not think that Donald Trump was the better looking candidate, but it didn't do her any good.
Well, I think it was also a gender issue, and that's still an issue I am concerned about. Can a woman actually win the presidency? I don't know. I think it might be easier to go a different direction, either to a gay candidate such as Pete Buttigieg or Latino, the largest minority in the country, as Julian Castro. And I've been really pushing the idea, these two men, Castro would be only 46, he'd be the third youngest president after TR and JFK, and Pete Buttigieg would only be 39 years and one day old, 3.5 years younger than TR and 4.5 younger than JFK, a person not yet 40. And I think that is an inspiration to have someone young and of a different background, and unfortunately being a male probably is an advantage over being a woman.
Well, this is an interesting question. I think Latino could probably be done. But for a long time, people, political scientists, people who were just interested in politics, booted around the idea, you know, will we have a woman president first, or might we have an African-American president first? Well, that's been answered now. We had an African-American president first. Now, it's kind of interesting because we did have a woman who made it about as far as you're going to make it without winning. But are we going to see a woman first, or are we going to see a same-sex candidate first, gay or lesbian? I don't know.
I don't know either, but I think it'd be a fascinating movement forward to have a Latino or a gay president, because I think it's necessary. The thing is, women have had their chance. Unfortunately, Hillary won the popular vote but lost, and of course, Sarah Palin and Geraldine Ferraro were running mates for vice president. I think that maybe that's still a greater issue to many men, unfortunately. which is still a factor. So I don't know if Elizabeth Warren or Amy Klobuchar or Kamala Harris can do it. I don't know. I mean, it's a lot to think about. But we have to see when the caucuses and primaries start whether Joe Biden and also Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders can sustain their lead in polls. Polls are not the answer. It's how people vote. We'll have to wait and see to February and March.
What does it say, though, that we have had a candidate, Geraldine Ferraro, for Vice President of the United States? We have had a candidate, Hillary Clinton, for President of the United States.
And Sarah Palin also.
And yes. Sarah Palin as well. Absolutely. We've never had, that we know of, a gay or lesbian candidate on any ticket, ever.
Well, the belief is James Buchanan might have been, and it seems possible. He never married, but it's not clear. That's true.
So the fact that we women have made it that far, they have won primaries, they have been choosable, nobody's even touched the gay issue yet.
No, but the country has changed a lot, and I know there are those who are very much against that, but I think they're a very small minority. I do think most of the country has no issue with people's sexuality, as long as it's appropriate public behavior, of course. I don't think it's an issue. And Latino, honestly, in my mind, after a mixed-race African-American president and a president that many people think is a white supremacist who attacked Mexicans on the day he announced, it would be real justice to have a Latino, a Mexican-American named Julian Castro, who grew up in poverty, become our president. And he'd only be 46, younger than Bill Clinton and Ulysses S. Grant by months and days. So again, that would be really appealing, either that or Pete Buttigieg.
Do you think, though, that somebody like Buttigieg could win in Ohio, could win in Florida, could win in Wisconsin, could win in Michigan, and maybe even Pennsylvania, places that are swing states which can go Republican, all of which did go Republican in the last presidential election, with a big swath of being part of the Bible Belt, I guess is the best way to put that?
I think he could win Wisconsin, Michigan, and very small margin, officially at least, for Trump. Ohio would be more difficult, but I also think, interestingly, Indiana, his own state. I know it's the state of Mike Pence. In fact, I've joked with Adam that let's say Pete got picked for vice president. He would have a debate with Mike Pence, who's so anti-gay. That would be a very interesting debate. It would be a fun debate to watch Pete against Mike. And I don't think Mike would look very good because Pete is very smart, very talented. He's inspirational. And I think there's a chance he could win the Midwest. I'm not sure about Florida. Florida is tough. And I'm not sure about Ohio. But I do think that he would have a real chance to add to the ticket or to help to win, yes. And maybe be running mate. Maybe a Castro Buttigieg ticket. That would be a real dynamite ticket. 46-39 when they took the oath. Youngest team ever. Younger than Clinton and Gore when they became president, vice president in 1993.
Why is it, after two debates now and all the announcements that, and with all these candidates, why is it Biden, who has taken most of the incoming in these debates and has not handled it very well, and has but yet he remains in first place?
Because he's loved as a human being. He's a wonderful person. I'm a big Joe follower. I've always admired him. He's one of my favorite figures. I'm just worried that he's not quite what he was. Like one friend of mine said, you look at the three older candidates. Sanders, whatever you think of him, the way he's performing, he's a 10. And Warren is definitely a 10. But maybe Joe is only a 5 or a 6. He seems slowed up, lacking in energy, and makes statements that I know he makes gaffes all along. But I think now that it's happening, and also when Harris attacks him, he just looks confused looking at the camera. I think there's a sign that he may not be what he was when he debated Paul Ryan in 2012 and Sarah Palin in 2008, and when he was in the primaries in 2008, not winning, but being great in his performance. I don't think he's the same, and I feel bad because I actually love the guy, but I just don't know if he can lead the country, into the next 4 to 8 years beyond, and I worry about it. And I think a younger generation like Kennedy, Clinton, Carter, and Obama is the way to go. I think I'm more and more leaning that way. We'll have to see how the voters decide, of course.
Well, something interesting. In the 2016 election, I think most people would say Hillary Clinton was a centrist Democrat, certainly more along the lines of Joe Biden, and
yes,
yet she lost the election.
I think Joe would have won it if he had been able to run and be the nominee. I really do. I think a lot of people think that.
Now, why do you think that?
Because, well, number one, he's a male, for the men who have trouble with a woman, and because he was Obama's vice president, although I know Clinton was Obama's secretary of state, and because people, I think, as a personality, they find him more appealing. Hillary always has a certain distance about her. She's hard to get to know. She's not as interesting a person as, say, her husband, Bill Clinton, was when he ran. I think a lot of it's personality and how they come across on TV and in meetings. And Joe's the kind of guy, he hugs people. He's very, very attached and very real and sincere and genuine. And that's what's so appealing about him. There are very few politicians like Joe Biden, and that's why I wish he was 10 years younger, because then I think he definitely would be the best choice. But I'm starting to worry that he might not be, you know, although I still am not giving up, but I am concerned and looking to other people like I've just suggested.
I think a lot of people would disagree with that statement for this reason. And I think the reason is that because he didn't run, because he never threw himself in the ring, we did not get to see the primary gaffes that he is making now, that I think he would have made 4 years ago, just 3 years ago. We did not see his past get thrown out, which we got to see Hillary's past on full picture back in 2016, and I'm sure we'll get to see Biden's if he is the nominee. And also, I think that people still underestimate what Trump did in 2016. He didn't just beat Hillary Clinton. He beat 16 Republicans. The Bush family, a lot of big Rubio, a lot of big Kasich.
John Kasich, yeah.
A lot of big names there, Ted mm-hmm. Cruz. And I think people underestimate what Donald Trump appealed to in 2016, and I'm not sure that there was anybody who could have beat him. It really was amazing what he was appealing to, for the good or the bad, depending on who you are.
But again, remember, he lost the popular vote by 2.85 million, and there's still investigations going into manipulation by the Russians. We still do not have the final answer, and I'm not really sure by those small margins that they were legitimate in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania.
But wouldn't that have happened with Biden as well?
Well, but not quite the same, because Hillary Clinton had really angered Vladimir Putin in the 2011 elections in Russia, and, you know, he was out for her. And again, I don't know if he would have, he might have, but I don't think it would have been the same against Joe Biden. But of course, you know, it's all what ifs, who knows? We'll never know for sure whether he would have won, but I am worried that he's not the best choice right now. But I've not given up, but I just have to wait and see how he performs in these later debates with smaller numbers, more serious candidates opposing him.
Now, last time, even though Hillary was a centrist, she was a woman. That was something different. Do the Democrats have to do that this time? Do they have to be Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, the big progressives? Do they have to be a gay candidate like Buttigieg? Do they have to be Julian Castro, a Latino candidate? Do they have to be not Joe Biden, not Cory Booker, things we've had before?
Well, I think that both Buttigieg and Castro would be alternative centrist candidates. They really much are like that. Sanders and Warren, particularly Sanders, is not. And I have people tell me, how can you call yourself a progressive and not be for Sanders? Because I think he has pie in the sky. He's trying to accomplish too much. He will never get it done, even if he gets elected, unless he has 60% of the House and Senate, like Lyndon Johnson with the Great Society in 1965, or FDR and the New Deal in 1935. If you don't get large Democratic majorities, whatever he's pledging will not come about. And I don't think we're going to have a Democratic dominance to the extent that people wish. I think that living in a dream world, and I think a more centrist viewpoint, and a lot of people will not like hearing this, which makes more sense, which is a Joe Biden and Amy Klobuchar possibly, or a Buttigieg forgetting his sexuality, and Castro, or even Booker, who's African-American, but they're all centrist, you know, center-left, which I still think is where most people would be, not the far left. So I don't think Sanders or Warren could win. I will support whoever is the nominee, but I will certainly have doubts that either Sanders particularly, but Warren also, could actually win the election.
Well, the question I have is if the Democrats going to win, do they have to convince Trump? Because as you just said, Hillary had more votes, and there may have been some manipulation by the Russians in other places. So does the Democrat running this time against President Trump, do they have to have do they have to convince Trump voters not to vote for Donald Trump, which I don't think is going to happen, or do they have to get those people who stayed home in Michigan and Wisconsin, who I think were Bernie Sanders people, to come out?
I think they have to get more people to come out and vote, more Latinos, more young people, more women, more suburbanites, more college educated. And I do think that we're seeing the reaction against the tariffs, how farmers are being, you know, irreparably harmed in the Midwest, and also truckers and people involved in the coal mines who are not getting their pensions and things like that. Typical Trump voters, and there's already indications that I don't know how many, but it's percentage, certainly a decent percentage of Trump voters are alienated now from Trump and will probably come out and vote against him. And so I really think the odds of Trump winning are far less than people, you know, who want to believe he's going to win. But you know, you got to get the vote out, and you got to avoid the issue of voter suppression, and of course, try to overcome any collusion that might go on. It's a lot of factors to consider, and it is very worrisome, because a second term of Trump would really destroy the whole system of government we have. We've already had so much damage being done already, and it cannot be allowed to go on for a second term.
Isn't there also the issue, and it's one of the issues that people don't talk about with Hillary Clinton very much, is that ballot access in 50 states will be had, again, by the Green Party and the Libertarian Party.
And that's a burden. That's a problem. You can't prevent them from running. And also, we could have billionaires like Howard Schultz run as an independent, or even Tom Steyer, and that can really take away a percentage of the votes and manipulate the end result. And it worries me, but we can't do anything about it. I just hope neither of them decides to run, but they both could run. And Steyer is trying to get in the debates when he hasn't been in them. And, you know, he's an interesting guy. He wanted to impeach Trump, but I am not out for the idea of having another businessman who's never been in government or the military to be our president. I think once is enough, and we should have learned from that. But, you know, money does talk, and BS walks, as they say. So you never know. Steyer or Schultz or both could be on the ballot, along with a Green Party and a Libertarian Party candidate, and really mess up the works.
What is going on with our former governor, John Kasich? First, he said he said for a long time that he didn't know if he was going to run. Then he released a book. Then he said he definitely was going to run because he couldn't beat Donald Trump in a primary. And now he's in New Hampshire. So what's going on with him?
I don't know. He's still working for CNN. I wish he would run. I've written that he or John Huntsman, who I thought was the best Republican running in 2012 and ended up working for Trump in Russia, but now is leaving. I think that the two, you know, substantial candidates who could stop him. But so far, it's frustrating. They're not doing so. And instead, Mark Sanford, the former governor and congressman, who I think is a total disaster to think of his running, is just on a moral basis with his affair with a woman outside of his marriage while governor of South Carolina. And now this one-term Tea Party congressman, Joe Walsh, who suddenly is saying, you know, it's nice to hear he's saying things against Trump. But the fact is, his past record is a disgrace, and he even said on CNN and MSNBC that he's sorry for what he said about Barack Obama and all that. And I said, well, indeed, that's nice you're saying that. What you need to do is arrange a public meeting with President Obama, with the media there, and go up to him and say, I'm really sorry. I apologize for what I've said about you. Please forgive me. And I said, Obama, the man of dignity and stature that he is, would hug him and say, that's fine, no problem. But he won't do that. I like to see Joe Walsh do that. That would show something, a real person of character. But just saying it, and, you know, he could be an annoyance to Trump, but he has no legitimacy to be a serious candidate, and neither does Mark Sanford. Now, Bill Weld is more serious and a decent candidate, but he's having no traction. So at this point, I think unless Kasich or Huntsman enters the race, or maybe even Nikki Haley, which I don't think is going to happen, I don't think there's any real challenge to him. But if one of them did become serious, even if he or she did not win the nomination, it would weaken the president for re-election, as Bush 1 was weakened by Buchanan, as Ford was weakened by Reagan, as Ted Kennedy was weakened by Carter was weakened by Ted Kennedy, and Jerry Brown, and as William Howard Taft was weakened by T.R. in 1912, it would help to make it more likely he would not win re-election. But I don't think it's going to be a serious challenge at this point.
But what is Kasich's game at this point? You know, he was back on CNN, I think just last night, saying he doesn't see a way to beat Trump right now. Now he's throwing that in. He has an analytics team put together that's looking at this. He's 67 years old. This is kind of his last shot, I think, to do something. What's the point with John Kasich right now?
I don't know, but I wish he'd make up his mind, and even though he thinks he wouldn't win, sacrifice, in quotes, himself to try to weaken Trump and save the country from Trump, which I think it could, because he would be a serious challenger more than Weld and certainly more than Mark Sanford or Joe Walsh. The only other one better would be Huntsman, with his foreign policy experience as ambassador to Russia now and China under Obama. Would be a great candidate, but I don't think Kasich is going to run. And I certainly wish he would, but he's going to have to decide soon.
Are there going to be any Republican primary debates? Haven't we kind of gotten past that point yet?
Well, I don't know. If Weld is still running, I assume there might be, but also Trump could decide he's not going to show up. He could do that. There's no requirement that he has to show up. He might say, I'm just going to give legitimacy to Weld or even Walsh or Sanford or anybody. So there might not be. I would hope that would weaken him in the minds of people that he's unwilling to accept a challenge. But, of course, he would insult whoever's running against him. That's his whole modus operandi.
At this point, why are Democrats not getting out of the primary? The people who aren't polling very well, the people who aren't drawing crowds across the country, the people who don't have much money raised, why are they staying in?
Well, they're staying in for ego. Let's face it, most of these people knew they would never go anywhere. And it reminds me of what Will Rogers long ago said in the 1920s, the Democrats are not an organized political party. That's always been their problem. They're often their own worst enemy. And they could botch it up badly this time. That's what worries me. Because I'm concerned that if one person ends up being far ahead but not having enough delegates, others like for instance, let's say Biden has more delegates but not enough, Sanders will fight it to the last minute of the convention. It could even be a contested convention, and that would not be good, and I'm worried about that. So there's lots of potential for a Democratic Party disaster, unfortunately.
Are we down to Bernie, Warren, and Biden at this point? Is there any way anybody else can do anything?
I am not ready to accept that. I think Kamala Harris certainly still could come, could move up. She slipped lately, and I still think Buttigieg and possibly Cory Booker and Castro and even Amy Klobuchar. I think we have to see more debates, and we have to see how things go in Iowa and New Hampshire. We have no votes until then, and so I would think once that starts to happen, if you're not in the top two or three in Iowa and New Hampshire, you're done. I mean, that's a fact. But it doesn't mean somebody who's not in the top three will not continue and just divide voters, But I don't think we're ready to say it's a final top three. And again, it worries me that they're all in their 70s and two of them would be in their 80s very quickly, only because I worry about we have a president now many people think is mentally unbalanced and maybe not all with it. And I think that's possibly true. And we don't need another president who also is seen as maybe not able to do the job fully in a mental sense. So I hope not, but we'll have to just see. It's never a moment of, I guess you say never a dull moment.
We know what the Republicans' slogan is, Make America Great Again. What is the Democrats' slogan?
They haven't figured it out yet. I guess bring America back to what it was or something like that. But also a need to move ahead to changes. And that's why I think a younger candidate would be more inspiring, again, like a Kennedy, a Carter, a Clinton, or an Obama. And I think if we have enough people in their 40s and 50s that we should really consider those. And hopefully that's the case, but we'll have to see how caucus voters and primary voters decided.
Does the Democratic nominee have to figure out if President Obama is a liability or a help to them once the general election starts?
In my mind, since Obama's public opinion ratings are very high, I think he's absolutely an asset and should be used in every way possible because he's rated in the American Political Science Association poll of scholars a year ago, and I was surprised it was that high, as eighth among 44 8th in the top 10 after being rated 12th in the C-SPAN poll of historians in 2017, and meanwhile not in the C-SPAN poll because Trump was not part of it. He had just come in. But in the APSA poll, he was rated, get this, 44th out of 44. And this is a year ago. And if anything, I think he's gotten worse. So, I mean, I do think Obama, not for people who might be racist, you know, there are people like that who just can't accept that we had an African-American mixed-race president. But honestly, while he's not perfect, nobody's perfect, he is rated as a success story. And as I wrote on my blog, actually, and also on History News Network, I said, often a president, not only his own record, but also who comes before him and who comes after him. And I say, look at Abraham Lincoln. Comes after James Buchanan, rated the worst, and before Andrew Johnson, rated the second worst until recently. And on the other hand, Obama, it comes after George W. Bush and before Donald Trump. So that makes him really shine even more. And honestly, a lot of people have said, as much as I was not a George W. Bush fan, boy, we would prefer to have him back now than Donald Trump, because that's how bad a person Trump is. Well, Bush at least was a decent human being who had good instincts, even if his policies were bad. So Obama, I think, is definitely an asset.
Well, it's interesting because every time I hear this talked about, is Obama a plus or an asset to the Democratic candidate, I think it's kind of interesting because everybody does go to racism, but I'm not sure that's where it lies. I think that that's a facet of it because of the birtherism that went on, but also if he was sitting president when the last election took place, he was a we were told he was a popular sitting president, even though his Secretary of State couldn't win. He campaigned harder for Hillary Clinton than any sitting president had done for anybody else. And Donald Trump, a lot of the things he ran against, Hillary Clinton had never been president. He didn't run against her policies. His chants were repeal, replace Obamacare. That holds Obama's name, still does. A lot of people are very unhappy with that. The regulations that Obama put on in Kentucky and Ohio, people didn't like that. People didn't like that he was forcing people to pay a penalty to the IRS if you did not have health care. You know, a lot of the things that President Trump ran on and Make America Great Again came from things have went down under President Obama. We need to bring them back up. So was he a liability to Hillary Clinton?
I still don't think he was, because remember, whatever else, she won by 2.85 million votes. And I think it was just small margins, officially anyway, in a few states that gave Trump the victory. But no president has ever been elected with such a negative popular vote. The closest was George W. Bush with 540,000 fewer votes than Al Gore. But the other three presidents who won without winning the popular vote only lost by 250,000 and 100,000, and I think it was 60,000. So, I mean, it still was a rebuke of the country that Trump lost by such a margin, but the technicalities of the Electoral College got in the way, and that is the problem.
Well, don't most people say, I've never heard President Trump say it, but haven't most people around him said the night that he decided he was going to run for president was the night that Obama made fun of him at the correspondence dinner?
In 2011, yes.
In 2011, and boy, you know, he did it.
Yes, he did. He manipulated himself all the way, and he was lying all along on so much, and he lies more than 12,000 times, according to the Washington Post, and he's lying more every week now than ever before. He's off the wall. He really is, and very dangerous and scary in foreign affairs, where the allies, or what used to be allies, but I think have doubts about us now, are really worried about his instability and his love affair with Putin and with Kim Jong-un, who now is testing more missiles, and he's overlooking it.
What do you make of the fact, I thought this was interesting, that all of the Democratic primary candidates, I think most of them, maybe one or two didn't, met with Hillary Clinton, but they all didn't have that meeting with President Obama?
Did they ask for it? I don't know if they asked for it or what. Well, they might have thought, I don't know, I'm not really sure why. I think they all should have met with Obama. I'm sure he would have met with anybody who asked to be, you know, to be so, but maybe they felt, I don't know. I really don't know how to answer that. You got me there, why they did not. But I think that Obama is an asset. It's interesting how Hillary Clinton's staying pretty much out of it as well, though, right now. She's not making many public statements. She's staying out of it, and she is not running for president as you once thought she would. I couldn't have imagined if she had what it would have done to the Democratic Party as she announced. So I'm glad she's not running, even though it's a shame because she won the popular vote bigger than Kennedy or Carter or Nixon and others won by, but unfortunately did not become president.
What do you think went on in those meetings? Even Biden met with her.
Well, they probably were asking for advice. It's hard to know. Ask her advice on how to run against Trump. Maybe try to get a sense of support. One thing I want to point out is there's reports that Obama met with Biden and said to him, Joe, you know, you don't have to run. I think he was having Obama doubts about Biden running at a time when he would be 78 in office. It's not public, but it was said by people at meetings that he did say, you don't have to run. But I think Joe felt he had to. And I just hope it all works out, but I am very worried about his ability to do the job. I'm not sure he can. I pray that he will.
If Biden doesn't end up with it, who's the logical second choice? Not who do we want, who do we think. Who's the logical second choice according to the polls and according to debate performance?
Well, I guess Elizabeth Warren, who is very impressive, no question about it. She's not quite as far left as Sanders, but I think that she scares people because she's a college professor and people don't like college professors. Of course, I myself am one, but I think people don't want to listen to what college professors have to say, and it brings back memories of Woodrow Wilson, who was a college professor, and a lot of people thought that he was lecturing us all the time, and many people might think that Elizabeth Warren is lecturing us, which I think is funny.
Well, what is going on? Because this is a big story as of late, certainly late last week. What is going on with China at this point and America?
Well, China is not going to cave into Trump. I think it's clear. And the soybean farm is already decimated, and the corn farm is on. And honestly, I think the way things are going, if it does not change, the Farm Belt might, for one of those rare times, vote against the Republican nominee. They might. They might actually vote the Democrat in. So it's possible there could be a landslide defeat. I don't know if it will. There's a chance it could be a landslide defeat of Trump, which I must say I hope occurs, because if it's a close race, he will claim it's false if he's losing, and he will probably say he's not going to leave the White House on January 20th, 2021. But if he has a sound defeat, he cannot say that. So for the sake of stability, I hope he loses big time. And there's a chance of that, because his tariff policies are terrible. He has not learned from history, from Benjamin Harrison and the McKinley Tariff of 1890, which led to the Panic of 1893, or Herbert Hoover with the Smoot-Hawley Tariff and the Great Depression of 1929 and the 30s. Tariffs are not good ideas in modern times, and they do cause economic collapses, and we're on the way with a 10-plus year expansion. We're going to have a decline anyway, but I think it's going to be made worse by the tariff policy that he's pursuing toward China and other countries as well.
Isn't the problem with China, and hasn't it always been something that we don't ever talk about when it comes to trade, is that whoever the United States president is, they will come and go. They are term limited.
Yes.
The China, the president's not leaving. He can just wait out whoever it is here.
Exactly.
And then that'll be that.
Exactly. And China is the largest nation in population. It's going to be more and more of a dangerous nation in this century. It's very worrisome, but I think that Trump's love of authoritarian leaders is his downfall in the long run, because I don't think you can really deal with these people on an even keel. And in the case of China, I think China's going to win this battle, and he's going to have to cave in eventually, but it's going to make him look weak, our president.
Impeachment.
Meanwhile, damage is being done to the economy.
Impeachment. For a long time, Nancy Pelosi said she didn't want it, but then she said, well, it's not off the table after Mueller testified, and then for a few weeks now, it's been summer and the news cycle's a little slow and not many people talking about it. Is it totally off the table at this point before the election?
No, it's 133, I think, 134 members out of the 235, I think, Democrats. have called for it. And honestly, my feeling is people say, oh, am I weak of the Democrats? It'll be used against them. I don't think it will. Of course, I'm not sure what will happen for certain. But in my mind, for the record of history, even though he will not be removed, we know that the Republican Senate will not remove him. But for the record of history, his abuse of power, obstruction of justice, and the violation of the Emoluments Clause, even now planning next year's G7 summit, and so many other things, for the record of history, his crimes, and I call them crimes, are far worse than anything brought against Bill Clinton or Andrew Johnson. And therefore, for the record of history, we must have in his first paragraph of when he passes away that our president was impeached but found not guilty, which is what would happen, just like Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton. I think it's essential for the record of history. Otherwise, it makes it look like, see, there was no case. And I think it's important that we do have an impeachment, just for the record.
But if he would lose in 2020, couldn't a case be brought against him once he was out of office with a jury that is not the Senate that might be more likely to convict him?
Yes, I think, but that still could happen. That still could happen. But the point is, for the record of history, we need to understand that the kind of things he's been engaged in, the destruction of the environment, the corruption of people in his cabinet, the foreign policy disarray, what he's doing to migrant children, so many other things, a long list, needs to be condemned as abuse of power and obstruction of justice, and also the strong belief there really was Russian collusion, and also the Emoluments Clause. So I feel the case against Bill Clinton was flimsy compared to this, and because he got impeached, although found not guilty, Trump has more reason to face impeachment, even though he will not be found guilty by the Senate.
Today's the anniversary of the 1963 March on Washington,
yes.
Martin Luther King Jr., I Have a Dream speech. Did that dream come true? Are we where Martin Luther King Jr. would suspect we would be in 2019?
No, I think we were moving forward in the last 10 years, but since Trump, we have gone backwards, and it is very, very regrettable and very disturbing. And we have a lot of work to do, but we are a multiracial, multi-ethnic country. We're never going to be a white-only country. Whites are going to be the minority, about 48% by 2050, and it's just something. We are a nation of all nations, and I don't think that's an issue to be upset about. We are stronger by immigration. We're stronger by having people of all backgrounds. And those who don't like it, I'm sorry, that's the way it is. There's nothing we can do about it. It's nothing to be negative about. And I hope we will be moving forward, but we need to get rid of what I consider a cancer in the White House. He is destructive of the office and very dangerous, and we have to get him out of there. And I just hope it will happen in 2020. I pray for it.
Well, we will see what happens in about the next, 15 months?
It'll 14 and a half months, actually. September 3rd will be 14 months, so it's just a few days to 14 months to go. You're right. And 5 months until the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primaries.
Right around the corner. It's been a pleasure, as always, to have on this program Dr. Ron Fineman, author, political scientist, professor, and regular guest Monday mornings, 10:10 to 11 a.m. on this station with Adam Lepp with Mid-Morning Coffee Break.
Thank you so much again for inviting me, and I look forward to coming back.
Thanks, Dr. Fineman. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that brings our show to a close today, but you've got the Charlie Evers Show coming up in about 10 minutes, and A Progressive Life with Glenn Coble, 12:10 to 1 today, and then later on in the day, we have Offbeat News and Trivia with Nate Redmond, 4:10 to 5 p.m., and the Trinity Baptist Church Sunday Sermon, 6:10 to 7. Stay tuned to WWGH Radio for much more programming.
It is say white. Then you miss, you can't go in there because that's white. That's white. Then you go to the other one or go someplace there. Or we can go in here because it's black. And then you go in black. And a lot of white people like black people's cooking. And they would go in our restaurants and get what to eat or either have you to fix it or either come to their house and cook. They would eat